Okay, so in the middle of Kitavo, we've done a little bit of the beginning of Kitavo and a bit of the end, so let's try for the middle a little bit. So Perek Chav Zayin starts off, Vayitzav Moshe v'Zikne Yisrael ha'am le'mor, shamor et kol mitzvah, asher anochi mitzvah etchem hayom. I keep all the mitzvah that I'm commanding you today. Vaya bayom asher tavru et yardein, ela aret asher adonai elu'echo notein lach, vakemotel lecha avanim gdolot, v'sadetau dam basid. When you get over the Yarden. Now there's a huge machloket exactly when this happens. Is it right away? Is it later on? Whenever it is, we'll talk about it in just a second. V'chatavta alihen et kol divrei haTorah hazo be'avrecha v'man asher tavo el haaretz asher Adonai Elohecha noten lecha eretz zavat chalav udvash kasher diber Adonai Elohei avotecha lach. Right. So you will write on them the whole Torah. Now, it's not clear what the whole Torah here means, whether it means the whole Torah or it means a certain part of the Torah. And it's referring to a limited unit. But you'll write it there so that you inherit the land. And when you cross over the Yarden, so then you'll put in Harival. And then you go on. And you have the Brachot and the Klalot in Anar Grizim and Harival. Okay, so the first major question that people deal with is when exactly this happens, and what exactly it means be'avrechem et hayarden. Now, on the one hand, it says when you get over there. On the other hand, geographically, it's complicated because Harival is not so close, right? It's very, very far from where they crossed over the Yarden. So the chronological question overlaps with the geographic question, which is which Har Grizim and Har Eval that are we talking about?
How many are there?
Well, that's part of the question, right? The Yerushalmi assumes that there's two. Right, so there are those who say that it took place right away, as the simple pshat would indicate, and Bayom literally means when they get there. Now, the problem is how did they get to Har Grizim and Har Eval, which is very, very far north? So you have two possibilities.
Nace,
right? So one sheet in Tosefta says it was a nace, right? So they flew magically from the south to the north. Or Rabbi Lezer and the Yerushalmi says, no, it was a different Har Grizim and Har Eval than the one you're thinking of, and therefore the one that we're talking about is, in fact, close to the where they came in at Yericho. Other Mepharshim say, okay, it's near the beginning, right, so like the Ralbag, Abarbanel say it's after the defeat at the Ai, right? So it's like at the beginning of the process, but not literally that day. So therefore, you can solve the problem of how did they get north, because you know you have a little bit of time. It doesn't mean that moment. And then there's other positions that say, like Rabbi Shmuel in the Midrash Tanaim says, no, it really was at the end, or the end of the conquest. So why do you say Bayom? Right, Bayom will mean the period of time. And then the most fascinating shita, which comes up both in the Gemara, in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, is this happens at two stages, right? They went twice, right? Okay, but I've talked about this in past years. So I don't want to dwell on that too much. But why, right? Why do you write the Torah on these stones, right? What is the purpose? So I just want to focus on two ideas that the Abarbanel introduces. So the first idea that Abarbanel introduces is that this is the national equivalent of a mezuzah. What's the purpose of a mezuzah? No, that's what you do with a mezuzah. What is the purpose of a mezuzah? You write on it, right? You write the Torah on mezuzah beitecha to remind you to keep the Torah, to keep God in mind. So as you are now going into the country, so he says, well, look at what it's accompanied with, right? When we're writing this, we're also doing the brachot and the klalot, which what are you doing the brachot and the klalot? You're literally going through the covenant and saying, keep the Torah, and if you don't, things will be bad. And if you do, things will be good. And everyone says, amen, 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 right? Everyone is accepting the Torah. So it's clear that what is the purpose of this procedure, especially if you think it's towards the beginning of the conquest, to remind people or to get people to be committed to the Torah, right? So if that's the case, you use the same idea as a mezuzah, which is you physically write down the content of the commandments, or at least a portion of it. You put it near the entrance to the country, just like you would at the entrance of your house, and you remind yourself that you are going to keep the Torah. Right? So this is the national equivalent of the mezuzah. That's possibility one. Then the Abarbanel has a second shot, which is important, A, because it's fascinating, but B, because, you know, one of the focuses of modern Tanakh study is using our understanding of the ancient world to get a better sense of what the Torah would have meant in context. So the Abarbanel basically does that. And he says, well, if you look around the ancient world, what did conquering nations do after they won a battle?
They would
put up some sort of memorial, right? And what would it commemorate? The victory. And how would you commemorate a victory? Who would you talk about? Who? No, not God. The king, right? The king. And maybe, right? Maybe you would also talk about the gods that helped the king be grand. Right? We talk about the king, right? You see this in, and if you go into like the British Museum, you can see many of these, right? You can see them from Assyria. You can see them from Egypt. All the other countries that England took them from willingly, you know, whatever. When you go there, by the way, like at the Greek exhibit, at least when I went to visit, there was like a stand with pamphlets. Why we don't have to give these back or something like that. Justifying why they don't. What? Yeah, it's Greece.
Because we took them.
Because we took them. Very good. So the Abarbanel says, well, what the inyan pesukim v'kavanatam hu sheYisrael im yitnahagu kiderech hanilchamim ba'im lareshet mishkena lo lahem. If they would act like any other conquerors, ein safek she'avraham and Yardim nichnesam la'aretz ahi shirtzu lechbosh yakimu avanim gedolot avnei sheyesh tohor v'yichtivu aleihem et advarim la'od zikaron b'dmut chazak shebo la'aretz. They would write this on a thing and talk about how strong they were because gadol. Uyad chazaka, vishnat kach, uviyarach kach, in this year, in this month, just like he says the Romans did, which is something he would have been more familiar with, obviously, having spent much of his life in Italy, right? He would, or at least the latter part of his life in Italy, so he would actually see these. So what does God say? What? Now finish the Abarbanel's thought. What is he doing?
Like he's qualifying it almost.
Right. Moshe Rabbeinu, Yisrael, those things that you would do as a victor, yasu mipat atzmam, yasu otam l'shem mitzvah. Transform it into a mitzvah. Instead of writing about your strength and power, you write about God. Because the victory is God's. Vehema lo becharbam Yeshu aretz. Right, and therefore what you write is you write the brit, and he says, aval ein, so as opposed to his first pshat, which is like a mezuzah, right, to get you to keep the Torah, he says, according to this pshat, it's not to get you to keep it as much as ein detziv al shmiratan, kim lahudiyam pol shiasu lishmiratan, ki lo amar mashar ui shetasu ki lishmor kol mitzvah, right? It's not as much about right the details, and much it is about remembering the covenant, remembering God, which will motivate you to keep the Torah. And therefore, with the Abarbanel, second part of his shot is the purpose here is to, on the one hand, integrate that which the people around them would have done when they were victors, but to transform it, right? To transform it. So instead of it being a statue to self-aggrandizement, it's a statue which recognizes the real victor, right? Which is God. And what does God want from you, right? God doesn't need you to sing his praises as much as he needs you to acknowledge that he did it, and then realize that that gives him the right to demand a covenant from you and has responsibilities with it, right? So it's taking that trope from the ancient world, keeping it, but transforming it to give the proper theological message. Okay? Right, and again, I think that right, you do find this here and there in the Rambam and in the Barbanel, where they try to recognize what would this have meant to people in the time of the Torah and the time of Tanakh. And in order to do that, you need to think a little bit what they would have done. And this is the Barbanel's suggestion. Okay, let's stop.